Hello, YouTube. I want to play a game. To all of you, I'm putting you on a test. In less than 5 minutes, this video will be over. That is just enough time for you to make a decision. You have the option to like or dislike my work. Just remain silent. Whatever you do, it's your personal decision. Whatever you do, it will make you choose a side. You are listening to my own version of this song, and you are now part of the puzzle. I admit, I enjoyed it in every second of making it. And if you like it, it means only one. You feel what I feel. You hear what I hear. Get yourself prepared. The game is about to start. Remember, time is on your side. Make your choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome
Maestro of Rock and Roll,
Mornay Leslie.
Yes,
okay, try again. Hello. Every time you do this, you sound like a lollipop. You know, this lollipop. Good evening, welcome to the Big Boss Man Show. No, I'm not the Big Boss Man. I'm still waiting for that.
You just thought, baby.
That's all.
Well, you got me for the boss man. Look at me around the clock. One little drink of water.
No. Folks, listen, I gotta be honest with you, just, I haven't been this even on my nerves when I met Gene Rockwell. Then now, when I know that Dwayne is in the room, see? Good evening, Dwayne, welcome.
Hey, how's it going, Mornay? How you doing?
Hello, Dwayne.
Hey, Cece, how you doing?
There we go.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah. Cece, can you
hear me? Hello.
Yeah, you need to put your headphones on. Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you 100%.
Okay. See, hello.
Hi, Dwayne. How are you?
There we are. I think we're all on the same page now.
Can't find the headphones. The
headphone situation.
Yeah, one of those.
That's all good.
But thank you so much for being, you know, I mean, like I said, I'm more on my nerves now than I was when I met your dad, you know.
I cannot imagine why, because my dad could make anybody nervous. Anybody.
Oh my God, I know.
Anybody. It was impossible. When it came to that, it was impossible.
Oh, right, he did. No. But he was so, so perfect and professional when it came to his job, you know.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you know, when you grow up and that's all you do, and that and it wasn't really a job with him. I mean, as you know, it wasn't a job. It was who he was. He was an entertainer, performer from the time I think that he could breathe and that he could think about what he was going to do.
I think your dad was 26 when Heart became the big, huge, huge hit, wasn't it?
Actually, I think he was younger. I'm not going to be exact because I'm getting older as well. My memory's shot. But I think he was younger. I think he was around 20, 21 when it really got. Yeah, no, it was. And I think that was part of the. I think that was part of the mystery of all of it, because I think a lot of the guys in those days were young, but they didn't get big until, like you say, a couple of years later. But he was, he was already performing at 14 or 15 on the beach in Durban. So, he was quite an established performer by the time he got to 20, 21. So I think it was around that time. Look, I could be wrong.
Yeah.
I could be wrong.
Yeah.
It might be a little bit later, but it was young.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, this is obviously going to be a stupid question, but You were born into the lifestyle, you know. Your dad to you was your dad, not Gene Rockwell, I suppose. I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
Both of those things are true. Both of those are true. I tell you why. Because, yes, he was just my dad. But at the same time, I traveled with him from very young. And I was on stages, running around up and down on stages from when I was about 3 or 4 years old. So I always knew what he did, but I didn't know that it was a big deal. I didn't know, obviously, as a kid. He was just my dad, and this is what he did. So I grew up. In fact, I got to school, and it became quite a difficult situation because I was at school, and I would say to people, they would talk about famous people, but these famous people I knew because they were my dad's friends. Yeah. And eventually it got to a point where people would say, "Are you lying? You don't know these people. How can you know these people?" And I would go, so eventually I stopped saying it. Eventually I stopped talking about it because I thought, oh, well, if they don't believe me, it's not, you know, they would talk about, I'll give an example, Eon DeFoss, the guy who used to fly the helicopter in the morning. So Eon was one of our house friends for a while. So I went to school and somebody was talking about him and I said, oh, he was at our house yesterday. And the guy was, oh, you're lying. Why would you tell a lie like that? And it was because I didn't really know that these guys, I didn't know what famous was. I just knew he was at my house. I
don't know. It was normal. You know, it wasn't as normal.
It was totally normal. Totally normal. To go out for dinner and people ask my dad for autographs and things like that, that was a normal thing for us. So, you know, yes, born into the lifestyle, but still he was just my dad. You know, he was just my dad. When he walked into the room, I didn't stand up and clap. He was still my dad, you know.
Oh, well, I would.
I think you would have liked it if I did, though.
Yeah, me too, actually. But you know, now that I think about it, you know, your dad, you know, we use a PG-13 language, but your dad didn't take shit from anybody.
Nah.
When he came to the studio, especially, you know, but he never, ever treated me in any way like I was, you know, never rude, never, you know, his voice, nothing, but all the others around him, yo.
Yeah, you know what it was with him? I think it was a mutual respect thing.
Yeah.
If you respected him and you did what he needed to do in the situation that you needed to do it in, I'll give an example. He would work with certain bands. And back in the day, there'd be a live band playing at the venue. So whoever the band was, they would be the backing band of the venue. Yeah. So what would happen is if my dad was playing at a place for the first time, he would send a cassette to these guys maybe 2 weeks before, and they would learn 8 or 10 songs that he was going to do.
Okay.
So now the bare minimum for something like that would be to get up on stage and the guys can play those 8 or 10 songs properly. You know, they weren't. Do you understand what I'm saying? So that's all you would expect.
I can see where this is going.
Do you see where it's going, though? So if he called a song that wasn't in that set list and the guys couldn't play that song, that wasn't the end of the world. That wouldn't be the end of the world. But if he played a song that was on the album, on the set list, I should say, and they played it wrong. If you played the heart bass line upside down or back to front, he would take the bass away and he would play it himself because he was an accomplished musician himself. So he would just take it away. But he was cruel. He could be very cruel sometimes.
I know.
Because,
I like the way he talks because I, you know, when I talk to my close friends, and this is the first time I'm actually talking about this publicly. I mean, he was straightforward, very honest, and he could be rude.
Yeah, but he was, man. But the thing is that he was what he was. Take me as you see me, and this is how you like me. And
exactly.
I think he was brutally honest on stage as well, insofar as a performer. So he would give you an honest performance. He would be honest with you. So he was a brutally honest person. When it came to, he never wanted to be cruel. But if you didn't do what was expected of you, and I mean to play the 7 or 8 songs for the muso, who was now booked on that particular day as a headliner, to play those songs properly.
The way he wants it.
Is the very least that you can do. After that, if you can't do that, you're going to hear it. I promise you, you're going to hear it because he was very exacting. I played with him for a little while. When I first got into the business, it was hell. It was hell.
How old were you when I know the song Trouble? I'll play it a bit later after this. Old were you when that? You know what? I can't tell the difference between you and your father.
You think? Really?
No, really,
Really? Jeez. Yeah, see, I can, obviously, because I can hear myself. But, you know, that song, it came out when the National, 1989, there we go. Yeah. It just landed in my brain while we're talking. 1989, it was the National Song Festival, and we were approached by a record company to do the song festival entrant for the Durban radio station. I can't remember what it was called, Radio Port Natal at the time or something like Something like that. I don't know what it was called at the time. So we were called, and they said, listen, do you guys want to do this? It was written by a guy in Durban. And this is a song, it's called Trouble, and it's about a father and a son, and my dad just thought it was a great idea. I thought it was a relatively good idea, and looking back now, it was, it actually leads to quite an interesting story, because what happened out of that was we did the live show, and it was a live TV show. So my very first real live performance was on live TV in front of millions of people. It blew my mind. It was one of the most terrifying days of my life. But you know, when you start with something like that, and it just felt very natural, felt very real. I sung a couple of really fraught notes. I didn't sing well at all. I sang badly. I thought terribly. I think I cried for about 3 days afterwards. I thought I'd let myself down. But you know what? I came from my father. I'm an exacting human being, and I like things to be done properly. And I like to do the very best job I can. I just felt that. And there were some huge names on stage that night. And I just thought, oh, well, you know what? This has happened. Nothing's ever going to come out of it. And 33 years later, here I'm still in the business, still doing what I do, you know, whatever.
And you're a very well-established name, you know, amongst. And I'm talking about the high class, folks. I'm talking about the high class. I'm getting my Batman voice. The high class.
Batman is my favorite character, by the way. this is my best. You know what it is? I'm established in the corporate industry. I've been in the corporate industry almost all of my life, so I do that predominantly. I did the whole one-man band thing. I loved it, but I always wanted to do corporate stuff. I wanted to MC. I wanted to do big rooms. I wanted to do Sun Cities. I wanted to do those types of things. And obviously being in the corporate environment.
Yeah, that's a whole lot of opportunities. Entertainment in one package.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to do, because I never classed myself as a singer, ever. I still don't. I never classed myself as any one of those things, not an MC, not a singer, I just wanted to entertain people. And if I could use my voice and my gift of the gab to do that, then I was happy. And it just kind of developed into that, you know. So I was very lucky. And I will be honest, because of who my dad was, a lot of doors opened for me really, really young.
Yeah.
And I blew it in a lot of respects. I got a little bit too big for my boots. Yeah, I just thought, you know what, I'm in now. You know, my dad's got me in, I'm in. So, and then suddenly I wasn't in and I had to start all over again. Very, very valuable. But it was valuable. But I'm sure you'll agree. It's valuable. Yeah, learning those lessons, never go back. You never go back.
Yeah, that's the thing. You always said that as well. Eh?
Yeah, you can't.
I'd like to ask something.
Sure.
The best advice that you've got from your dad. What is that?
This is so easy. So easy. It's almost like we prepared these questions beforehand.
Susie went and she just prompted a list in front of me. But just before I started, I was like, what are you doing? She says, no, this is going to happen. Number two is going to happen. I said, no, we're just going to wing it. I'm on
Here's
my nerves,
the thing, though. Cece also said to me, is there anything we want to talk about? You know, the thing is with me, I like to just wing it. I like to. I just think it's more honest, you know, and I can feel you guys, you work the same way. Now, I was 18 years old, and my girlfriend fell pregnant. And she was at school, and I was just out of school, first year out of school. She fell pregnant and we were having this baby and I had no idea how to make money. It was 1986 and I didn't know. I really did not know what to do. I had no idea. I had to go to the army. The army was waiting around the corner. Mm. I was at Wits Tech doing some stupid course. I lasted about 6 months.
It was just sounds interesting, that part.
I was rubbish. I was rubbish. I was the worst student in the world. And I didn't want to be there. I didn't know where I wanted to be, but I knew I didn't want to be there.
Circumstances. I mean, come on.
And it was rubbish. It was rubbish. They were teaching me rubbish, and I thought it was something I'd be interested in. It was nothing to do with the course. It was all to do with me because I didn't want to be there. So it was my fault entirely. So I went to him and I said, listen, Dad, I've got this baby coming. I've got to pay for nappies.
What did your dad say when you told him, hey, listen, you're coming grandfather?
Yeah, he looked, he knew. I think he knew me and I was naughty, you know, and it was, I was naughty and I was silly and I was irresponsible and I was immature. And I think what I did was I went to him and I said, listen, I've got to buy nappies. I've got to pay for this. I've committed to this child. I'm not leaving the girl. I love her. I'm not leaving her. I want to see this through. I don't want to be that guy who makes girl pregnant in high school, disappears, never sees the kid. I'm not going to be that guy. Thank goodness I didn't, because my son is now 35 years old and I love him more than life itself.
It's the
best mistake I ever made. Born man. Well, I'm serious. Best mistake I ever made. And my daughter movie. And my daughter's now 30. She's pregnant, having her baby in September.
Yeah, actually, I saw that on Facebook. I think
she wasn't a mistake, but she's the best thing I've ever done in my life. My two kids are my two greatest achievements. Not that they're mine alone. Clear. So anyway, I went to him. So anyway, to go back to your question. Sorry, Cece. We've got this conversation happening between father and son. And he was very chilled about the whole thing. He just said, look, you know what? You got to do what you got to do. And I said, so what do I do? And he said, you know what? The only advice I can ever give you that is ever going to mean anything is do what you know.
And that's right.
Great advice. You know. I'm 18. I know nothing. What are you talking about?
What do you know?
I'm actually not even sure what you're talking. Listen, I came for advice, not rubbish. What do you? And he says to me, what do you mean you know? What do you mean you know nothing? I said, Dad, I'm 18. I know nothing. He said, you've been on the road with me since you're 12.
I think you know a lot then. So.
He says, you know this business. And I said, I know what? He says, you know this game. You know this. You know how this works. And I said, well, I don't want to sing. I don't want to play. So he said, I'll tell you what, I'll make a call. And he made a call to a guy called Savage, who owned a company called Toxic Sun Mobile Discos.
Yeah.
I was mobile DJing. And about 2 weeks after that, I was mobile DJing every weekend, flat out. And I did that for about 3 years. And I paid for those nappies. And I learned the business. And I learned the business DJing at wedding after wedding after wedding after wedding, learning how to talk to people, learning how to communicate, learning how to, you know, learning how to engage audiences.
That's very important. How to engage, how to talk. I mean, I still struggle with that.
Really?
If I can't break the crowd with the third song, then I don't have the crowd.
Look, I see where you're going, but you know, you know what? A lot of the answers tonight from me are going to come in the form of stories. And I'll tell
I like that.
And I'll tell you why, because I arrived, I was young, man. Jeez, I must have been about 16, 17. And my dad was booked to play at a venue in Sandton. So we loaded up the car. I did his sound. I always did his sound, engineered, set up the gear, all that stuff. So I loved that part of it. I loved the whole technical thing right up front. So I always had an ear for it as well. He used to always say I had such a good ear for good sound. And
that's
we got to this gig.
Dad said that, yo.
but he did. He always really appreciated my ear. He always, even from young, I could hear something and say, geez, Dad, that sounds good. I like that.
Wow.
Well, that's a good solo. It was just, I really loved music. It was one of those things that was a massive.
You know, I think if your dad, your dad was a very strict and very good, one of the best producers in dynasties in the country. Then I think you will be a nightmare when it comes to me.
I'm too soft. I'm too soft, man.
I'm too hard on myself again.
I'm too soft. I'm hard on myself, but too soft on everybody else because I know how hard it is. So we get to this gig, man, and he says, okay, go upstairs, go see the room, see what we need to take in terms of sound or how much sound we need or whatever. Yeah. So I walk upstairs, and all I see everywhere is happy 21st birthday banners everywhere. Happy 21st, happy 21st, happy 21st. So I run downstairs, and I say, Dad, start the car. Let's go. And he says, what? I said, Dad, it's the 21st. What are you going to do? What are you going to sing? You can't sit there and sing your country music to a 21st. Are you mad? I'm not going with you. No. Hey, never. I'm not going in. I'm not going. So he said, he looked at me like I was stupid, which I was. And he said, don't talk nonsense. Get my stuff upstairs, set up. So yeah. I did this, but I did this with a long face, man. A long yeah. face. I wasn't happy. I thought my dad... I honestly thought, seriously, CC, I thought this was going to be the first time I ever saw my father get booed out of a venue. Honestly. I thought, this is it. I'm telling you. And I thought, you know what? I thought, he's delusional. He's what's he going to sing? Coffee Black, Wasted Days and Wasted Nights to the Oaks at the 21st. Someone's going to get killed. So... I'm serious. So I think to myself, I don't know.
Dwayne was a pretty good idea because he said like it is. I love this.
So, yeah, but no, listen, here's the thing. So now I say to him, okay, listen, let's do this thing. Within three songs, I promise you, every single person in the venue was chup still, not a single word. Yeah. Nobody was looking away. Nobody was breathing heavy. He was sitting there. He had every single one in the palm of his hands.
Yeah, but that's what I mean.
You know what? Here's the thing. He only sang about three songs in 45 minutes. Yep. The rest of the time, I swear, I promise you, he just talked to them.
No,
and he just entertained them.
That's where
them.
I learned that. So stop but he just, cocking that's me it. Out about that.
And then he would say to them, you know what? You're not going to know this song, but I'm going to teach you something. Watch this. Yeah. So I'm going to teach you something. And then he would do a song that every kid in the room had never heard. Maybe their parents had heard it, but the kids had never heard it. By the end of the 45 minutes or the hour, whatever it was, they loved my father so much. The young girl who turned 21, she was crying, and it was another whole chadunta, I promise you. And I just thought that night, he was an entertainer. It wasn't about the music.
You know, that's the thing. And I said to CZ earlier, you know, you can be one of the best singers ever, but like Steve Hoffman and all those guys, and I keep saying this, but... if you can entertain as well, that's what you're there to do. That's not just, you know, sing. You've got to entertain.
That's it. That's it. It's two things. If you want to just sing, then you may as well just put the CD on and and watch. But if you want to really feel the music, you have to be entertained. And you have to connect with an audience. You know, and my dad, honestly, I don't say this lightly. I don't. Yeah. Because I have massive respect. Honestly, I do, for every single person who's got the guts to get up on a stage and do what they do. I've got huge respect. Huge. Huge respect. Whether you are brilliant or whether you're just trying your best, I don't care. I respect you for that. If you get up and you're rubbish, but you've got a massive ego, then I don't respect you. Do you know what I'm saying, though? But my dad, I promise you, as an entertainer, was as good as anybody I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
I'm telling you, and I've seen a lot of people. I've seen stars all around the world as an entertainer, not a singer, singer. Yeah. He was a good singer. He was not the best singer in the world. He would have told you that himself. He was a great interpreter of songs, but he was an entertainer, second to none.
And that makes kind of sense, but I mean, he still had a fantastic voice.
You're talking. Isn't that something? Would you rather a guy sings it with heart? Or pardon the pun, would you rather he sings it with heart, or would you rather he sings it pitch perfect? You want some emotion, you want some feel, you want some energy. Otherwise, seriously, otherwise put the CD on, it's cheaper. You know what I mean? Stay at home, you know, stay at home, have a nice meal and listen to the CD. It's just, otherwise, what's the point, man?
So Monet, you also got advice from Gene when he
listen, let's keep that to
no, no, I'd
no, no, no.
To
I
want to
hear that. I want to hear that.
Please, please share
come
with
on.
Us.
go on.
Except for
no, go there now. No, well, basically, it's an Afrikaans. He said to me, "It is hond, eat hond business. Yeah. This is dog eat dog business."
Yeah. Okay. He's right.
He always called me Boyke. You know, the only person that passed away, my dad, called me Boyke, and he always called me Boyke.
Yeah, funny enough, you've just made me a little bit emotional because he used to call me Boyke. You know, not all the time.
Oh yeah, that's so cool. Actually,
when we weren't fighting, he would call me Boyke.
did you guys fight a lot? I mean. Is this a star sign thing?
You know what? It could be, but I'll tell you what it was. We were both very, very strong personalities.
Yeah, man.
And
very the same.
Much alike.
You know what? I think in terms of attitude, yes, but in terms of personalities, no. We were completely different. But there was another part of me. I was young and stupid, like I said.
Yeah.
I would do a lot of things differently. I would do a lot of things exactly the same. And one of the things I would do exactly the same is I didn't treat my dad like a superstar. I treated him like my dad.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes he could fall into a trap of talking to us like he was Gene Rockwell.
Yeah.
He wasn't. You know, to me, he wasn't that. To me, he was my dad. So, you know what I mean? So I would often push back, whereas band members or guys in the studio or fans, they wouldn't push back. But I wasn't one of those. I was his son. And I was and I had quite a strong personality. And he
I can hear that.
He would push me and I would push back. Listen, I love
you. Yeah, see,
I
that's the problem with that thing with me and my mother.
Really? Yeah, but you know what? It's good though. It's good though, because I mean you love each other dearly, right?
Yeah.
You love your mother. You love your mother. I loved my father. Course, but I wasn't blind to who he was.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he wasn't. I knew who he was, and he knew who I was. So we couldn't bullshit each other. Excuse my language.
Yeah.
We
couldn't lie to each other. That's true.
We couldn't do that. You know what? We couldn't do that. So I never took any of his crap, and he wouldn't take my crap. And that's a good thing. Even though we were father and son, we were very good friends and very close because we were on the road so much.
And you were on the road with him since 12.
Listen. Well, not all the time. I mean, it would be in holidays and over the weekends and things like that. I mean, I'm going to tell the story, but I could be remembering it slightly wrong. Slightly wrong.
Okay.
But I think the first time I ever drove my dad to or from a gig, I was about 12 or 13 years old. And the gig was only about 3 or 4 kilometers away. But I drove my dad. I think it was to Margo's Pleasure Resort. It's somewhere in the south. And we used to live in the south. So I think I was about that age. And I wasn't supposed to drive. And he was being naughty. I was being naughty. I don't know what. I don't even know why you asked me to drive.
That's what I miss about my daddy, man. I'm telling you, that's naughty.
That's it. And those days were different. You can't do that stuff now. You could never do that shit now. I mean, you get locked up for that. And we probably would have got locked up then as well. But, so I was on the road. I learned how to do the sound. I learned how to be with them. I learned how to go in and talk to the clients. I got very good with clients as well, because obviously I would get to places and I'd have to talk to the guys about organizing this and organizing that and do that and do this. And it was a great, great learning ground for me. I didn't know it at the time, but I was really in school from 12. You know, I was in school.
Yeah.
I was in entertainment school.
No.
Man. I felt like I was part of the circus. And the natural thing to do was just go and join the circus. So I joined the circus. You know what I mean? It was in the circus.
And now you're in. Nowhere else.
That's it. You know, that's... listen, I've tried to get out, eh? I've tried.
Me too.
I've tried.
Me too.
I've tried.
Me too.
I've tried. And it's...
Well, then
you know
it's
what?
Meant to be, eh? Then you mustn't go out.
No, it's in your blood. I'm telling you. I tried too. You know what? No.
Even now, I mean, my job in terms of what I do is totally different to what I did 10 years ago. And that was totally different to 10 years before that. But it's always in the same industry. Because you know what, Mornay? Yeah. You know, Cece, you know. It's all of you know. It's in your blood. Do what you know. Do what you know. Otherwise, everything else.
That's the only thing I know.
But you know, see, that's the thing.
I'm kind of, you know.
But the thing is, though.
Then, I mean, I'm 42, you know. Where am I going to get a job now?
Listen, I'm much older than you, but there's not a job in the world for me. You know what I mean? So if I don't do this, I'm gardening. Yeah. I'm doing gardening, but that's the only other thing I've got left. But it's like my dad, if you're not being yourself, you're being, unkind to yourself. Then you're lying. Yeah. Then you're lying, you know. Just do. And the only time you're successful in this business is if you are authentic. I'm telling you now.
But how do you know when you yourself, I mean, let's take for instance, Max Mornay Leslie will be stage, I guess Mornay Simon, but he's public. Right. But now, infinite characters, and you know, they start a lot of too much, let's say, energy into that character, Mornay Leslie. So I think, kind of along the way, you start forgetting who you really are.
I think you can. And I think you do. And I think a lot of people do. And the question is impossible to answer, I think, in terms of how do you know when you're being yourself? The only thing I know is the only time I realized I was being myself is when I got to gigs and I didn't have to try and remember who I was for these people last time I worked for them.
I
just got there and I would go, right, I'm just going to do what I do. And whatever came, because I knew that that's all I'd done the last time. Because if you're not yourself, you're going to continually question whether you're doing the right thing, because you're going to forget who you were. I mean, you could go to a gig one night and be the funny guy, be the crazy guy, be loud, jump around like your ass is on fire.
The next
time you work for them, suddenly you're smart and you're picking your words carefully. And the guy comes up to you and goes, Dwayne, are you okay? And you go, now, why? Wow, what did I do? He said, I don't know, but last year you were completely different. But then you know. You weren't being authentic.
That's very true.
There's no way. Otherwise, you wouldn't have been two different people. Yes, you can have different shades of yourself, but just, you know what, and try not to think too much about who you are and what you're doing. Just do it.
Mm. Yeah, that's actually very good advice.
And just another thing that I'm wondering about now is how did your dad handle critique from media? And, you know,
didn't show me your question.
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a great question.
I was just wondering, thank God I'm not the one.
No, this is a cool question. I like it. I like it. Because I tell you what, listen, let me put it to you this way. If I've told you everything I've told you about my dad already, okay? And then you ask me the question again, you can actually answer yourself even, because he did not take kindly to any bad criticism. Let me tell you something. If he got a bad critic, he would just think the Oak was an idiot. He would just honestly say, the Oak's an idiot. I don't care. And if somebody said, oh, you shouldn't do this or you shouldn't do that, all it would do is make him do it more.
That's just the way Monet is.
I'm telling you.
Don't tell me you can't, you won't, then you will.
I think that's a human being condition. It's a failure. Yeah. But this,
not bullshitting myself there.
But listen, here's the thing though. He did not take kindly to it. He was, here's the real honest truth. The reason he didn't take kindly to it was because my father was a big softy. He was a sensitive, very, very sensitive human being.
Wow.
As big as his body was, so was his heart. Yeah, he had a massive heart on him. He was soft. He was kind. He was gentle.
He loved his fans, eh?
He adored his fans. Yeah. But he had a side to him. He had a side to him. You know what I mean? He could get angry. Yeah. He could be. Of course. It could be moody. He could be, but that's the same for all entertainers. When you get, it's a story about the clown.
People don't get this. They say bipolar or some shit.
It's not bipolar. That's such crap. You know what it is? If you're an entertainer, you spend so much time trying to make other people happy, right?
You're giving yourself.
You're giving exactly, but you're giving of your energy all the time, massively.
Yeah.
If you're doing it properly, if you're doing it properly, you're giving every inch of yourself, everything you do. So that's going to leave you depleted. There is no way you can then go home and be that same person in front of your kids and your wife and your family and those two. Because for two reasons. One, you're exhausted. And two, it would be annoying.
And you're irritated.
It would be irritating. Yeah. So you get
be
home
left alone.
And you do. But you want to recharge. Yeah. You want to recharge. Yeah. Different people recharge in different ways. My dad had weird ways of recharging. But you had to let him do those things, and that's who he was. And love him or hate him, he was who he was. Yeah. You know, but he didn't take the criticism. And I know he would say, that guy's just an idiot. He doesn't know what he's talking about. It wasn't that. That wasn't the truth. The truth was that he took it hard. He didn't like being criticized. Yeah. He was a soft,
yeah, when he's alone,
he's sad
and he's broken.
Absolutely. He would never tell you that. We could see it, obviously.
We could see it.
Yeah, because he's a proud man.
And you must remember, old school, eh? He was old school.
Yes,
he was old school. You know, he was born in Krugersdorp. He was raised on the Bluff in Durban. He was
tough. The Bluff?
The Bluff in Durban, my boy. That's where he grew up.
I never knew this.
I'm telling you.
God, I never knew. My brew, like my brew.
I'm telling you. Tough as nails.
I know. It's a dangerous black.
I'm telling you. He was kicked out of school in Standard 7. Standard 7. I'm telling you. He was tough, man. They grew up poor. My father was so poor. They lived in a tiny little room on one of the roads on the Bluff. Tiny little place, him, his mom, and his three siblings. The father had disappeared years ago. So he was an old school dude, man. He was an old school guy, you know. So he would never, crying wasn't his thing. And he didn't want to show that he was
He had to be the man of the house.
He could cry when he was singing these songs.
Yeah, he could cry when he was singing his songs
because that was kind of...
You know, we were raised the same way. Cowboys don't cry.
You know? Cowboys don't cry, you see. Yeah. And it's funny because I'm a guy who cries easy. I don't mind. I don't care. I cry for the Cremora ad, man. When the guy finds that thing on top there, I'm crying, man. Cry easy. Now. I'm telling you. I cry easy.
Yeah, I've got a soft heart.
Me too. Me too. But you know what? But it's funny because my dad was a tough guy, but I grew up very able to do those things. So it wasn't so much that he was just brought up old school and he was, you know, there were all those guys, man, those guys from the '50s and the '60s, the rock and rollers and the DuckTales.
You didn't fuck with me.
No, you don't mess with those Oaks, eh? You never did. Listen, and the Oaks who used to travel with my dad, they were heavy, heavy Oaks. I was scared shitless of those guys when I was growing up.
They had to be. I mean,
I'm telling you, a lot of the guys.
Tell me, how did dad handle the female attention?
Yeah, he loved it. Loved it.
That's what we do. Okay. There you go. CC answers your question. That's what we do. It's not like we wanted We loved it.
He loved it. And did he encourage it? Did he ever do anything? No. He wouldn't follow through on it. He wouldn't take them up on it. You know, that kind of stuff. But he loved it. And I'll tell you, a lot of the reason was this. It's a very old theory in the game. But if you can get the woman to the show, the men are going to come with.
And that's why I have bodyguards. Believe it or not, eh? That's
what you got. Listen, but I'm telling you, because the guys are going to come with, because the guy wants to take his wife or girlfriend to a place where she's going to be happy. So you take her to go see a show where she loves Gene Rockwell or she loves Clive Bruce or she loves Lawrence James or whoever these guys were. So she's happy and you get to take her home. So, I mean, it's a great deal all around. But my dad used to love the attention. But I will tell you this. I'll tell you this. My dad got as much attention from Oaks as he did from guys in terms of they admired him because he was because of his disability and things like that. And the fact that he got up and he did what he did. There were a lot. Oaks used to love my old man. They would love him. Yeah,
and
listen.
I wish I could get that from the male.
Listen, you know what?
I think it's a different era.
Yes, it is.
Because if you look at today's couples. I know for a fact about a few people that the girls would say, oh, we're going for a girls' night.
Yes.
So they're going to watch, say, for instance, Snotkorp or Bobby, you know?
Sure.
And the men are doing their own thing.
Yes.
So it's not like in the old days when the guys wanted to take his girl wife to the shows.
Yes.
It's different now.
I think you're right on two scores. Two scores, I think. One, there aren't as many opportunities to go out like there were in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah,
you know, they used to have all these Sunday shows and things like that. Yeah. So every Sunday you would have a show, you go to Bopsfontein or Artie's or all those kinds of places. Those things don't exist really anymore. Everything's much smaller. So I think the opportunities are different, number one. And I think CC's right. I think there is this... Well, take the girlfriends out. I'm going to go drink with the boys and watch the game and you can go and do your thing. I think there's a lot of that. I think it's sad though as well, to be honest. I don't.
Yeah, and there's no unity. There's no.
I'll be honest with you. I would much rather go out with my girlfriend than go out with the boys. Definitely. Yeah. I would much rather. No, absolutely.
That's true. When I was married. Then
You see what I'm saying? It's
Not because I had to, but because I felt, you know.
No, I mean, also, you know what? When you boys talk to boys, it gets boring quicker.
It does. And then they start drinking.
And you know what? I think when I was still drinking, even then I battled to go out with the boys all the time. Once every 6 months it was different, but now that I haven't touched a drink in over 4 years, and let me tell you, now the thought of going out and doing something I'd much rather go to dinner, watch a movie, go watch a good band, do something like that, you know, with my girlfriend. I'd much rather do that than. But you're right, Cici. I think the times have changed. And maybe with any luck, you know, they say everything works in circles and cycles. So hopefully it'll go back to that.
Yeah, that would be good.
I think
that would be fantastic. Maybe I'll get more work.
Listen, I think everybody will. But listen, just to go back to what you were saying about the guys, you know, the good attention from guys. I don't think you can think about it. You've got to just do what you do and let the cards fall where they may. And you know what? Take if the guys don't love you, maybe it's
they don't. Yeah, I'm serious when I said I got bodyguards. I swear to God, professional.
Yeah, well, there we go. But I'm saying if they don't love you, maybe take that as another sign. Maybe it's not out of anything other than a bit of jealousy and a little bit of that exactly, you know.
But you know, I'd love to buy this one of them a beer and sit and talk with them, like 5 minutes, just like 5 minutes. And they can see that I'm not that big of an asshole that they think I am.
But you know, but Mornay, it's not that they don't like you.
Mm.
You know that. It's not they don't like you. They don't like Mornay Leslie, the performer. And you know, you can't take it personally. That's the one thing that my dad also, although he used to take the criticism personally, if they did, somebody didn't like him as a singer, he'd go, well, fair enough. That's your choice. You know, that's cool. Yeah. That's cool. Because you can't take it personally, man. You know, we put ourselves out there. When you stand up and sing on the stage, dude, you're putting your heart and soul out there and you're going to take shots. There's no way you are going to take shots.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what? As long as more people, as long as one more person likes you than doesn't, you're still winning.
Yeah, yeah, that's very true. Very, very true.
Nothing. Okay. Yeah. Nothing.
Sorry. So, if your dad wasn't singing, what was other things that he loved to do?
Did you Google these questions? Is that kind of good?
These are good
questions.
Hey. Cece, you got a real thing about questions. No, I like this. No. That's a good question. Okay. He loved sport, he loved cricket. He loved cricket. Oh. He could watch cricket for 5 days. Nonstop.
And do you like sport?
Or? Yeah, I love something. Sports mad. Love rugby, cricket, tennis. I love sport. I used to love it a lot more, but my son is also, he was a very good sportsman. We grew up watching sport together. So it's something that has gone through the, and my dad loved TV. He just loved TV.
But
you know what? But again, I'm sure
I can lie down 2 days and just watch movies, man.
But that's it though, because
that's my leg. That's my time.
I tell you what he loved most, Cece. He loved gadgets. He loved gadgets. He loved anything that was a gadget. He was one of the very first. I nearly said the first, which would have been a lie. He was one of the first guys in South Africa to have a car phone. The thing was so rubbish. It was such a bad. It was such a piece of crap. It was a Siemens. I'm telling you, it was such a piece of crap. It was put in the middle of the car, and if you wanted to drive and make a call, you couldn't because the signal was so fraught. So we had to stop on the side of the road. I would have to stand out the sunroof with the phone to try and get a signal. It was so. But he had to have it. He had to have this thing. Cost him
To have a phone in your car in those days, that was the man.
He was the only oak, I'm telling you. And then when cell phones came out, he had cell phones. He loved gadgets. He loved, could never, in the house, if you ever touched the TV remote, you would lose a hand. You could not touch that.
That's what I am.
He was king of the castle. That's my remote. You don't touch the remote. So he loved TV. He loved sport. He would come and watch me play sport as much as he could. Outside of that, my dad's real love, more than anything, as he would every single day, he would listen to music. One way or another, he would listen to music every day.
I wanted to ask that. I mean, did he, I want to know this. You know, did he listen to his own albums, his own records?
Only at one point in every record would he listen to it a lot. And that's when they were making the album. So while they were making the album, he would come home.
Okay.
It used to drive us mad, Mornay.
You know, I feel your pain because I'm the same, man. Oh. I find 200 problems and faults in that damn song.
Absolutely. and eventually my mother used to go through to the lounge and say, listen, please, if I hear that song one more time, I'm going to kill somebody. Because he would play the album over and over and over and over. And we were sleeping, so he would play this thing until 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. In the lounge. Then he would put his earphones on. He used to play it so loud through the earphones we could still hear it. But it was he was only listening. But he was only listening because he was producing as well. If he wasn't, he would never listen to his album outside of that. He was not the kind of guy who somehow on a Sunday would go, okay, let's listen to Elvis. Okay, now let's put on one of my albums and then listen to... Never. He would never do that. Yeah. In fact, if you would go to people's houses and they would put his music on, he would tell them to take the music off or he would leave. You wouldn't. He hated it. He didn't.
Wow.
Yeah. He didn't like that. He didn't like it at all. Sure. He didn't like being. He really was that guy. He didn't. I don't think he minded being center of the attention. The center of attention. I beg
your pardon. That's exactly what it is.
I don't think he minded that. But if you brought, if some point or another,
you kind of drew more attention.
That's it. But you know what you don't want to do? If you ever brought a guitar out and said to my dad, play a song, that's it. He's going home. He's going home. He's going home. He won't even tell you why he's going home. He'll just get in the car and go home. He won't even tell you. So I'm going to go to the toilet. When I come back, I'll sing a song. He never comes back. Because...
No. At least... How did he get out normally? Because, you know, I've climbed through windows.
Nah, I'm telling you.
People wearing my jewelry and my jackets to get out of a place.
My dad will just tell you straight. Yeah. I'm not doing it. I'm going home. Yeah. Cheers. My father, he was very stubborn. My father was the most stubborn human being in the world. He was like a donkey. He decided nothing could change his mind. Nothing could change his mind.
But you think that was, I mean, one of the good, you know, factors that he had, attributes that made him, you know?
Yes. I do.
And what was the one of his own songs that he loved?
Like doing his own recordings, or
I've got one. He did a version of a song called MacArthur's Park in the 90s, late 80s, early 90s. Bobby Lowe was the producer, I think, on that album.
Oh, Bobby,
they did that at Boot Erasmus's studios, in Rudaport. They did that, and he did a version of a song called MacArthur's Park. And
I read about that. Yeah.
It's an old song. Everyone's done it. Everyone who could sing at some point in that era did a version of that song. But my dad did a version that he truly, truly, truly was proud of.
MacArthur's Park, hey?
MacArthur's Park. It was about the left the cake out in the rain. It was a great song, man. A 7-minute song, something like that. It was long, man. Yeah. It was a great song. It was well produced. He sang the hell out of it, and he really was proud of that. I don't ever remember him saying, "Oh, I really like that," but I always remember him going back to that particular song as being something he was very proud of. Yes. Another thing that he was very proud of in terms of just his general catalog was, and I'm going to say the song "Heart," but not what you think. Not what you think. He was very proud. He was very proud of that song, obviously.
Yeah.
It wasn't his song. It was a song done by an Italian guy before him. But my dad's one went dum-dum. Right? The original went like this. Dum-dum.
Yeah, that was on a 45. And his was down. Yeah.
That's it. But now my dad did that on purpose. He heard the original. Dan Hill gave him the song.
Yes.
Said, listen to this song.
Yeah.
And my dad played it at 33, not 45. Yeah. And he played it at half speed. And that's the way they recorded it. They never recorded it like the original. He was very proud of that. He was very proud of the fact that he knew that song was something different in a different form.
He knew it.
He knew that sounding like a broken heart, rather than a beating heart that was freaking out, it was a slow, dying, beating heart that was in pain.
And you could, you know, you could convey that so beautifully.
That's exactly. I think MacArthur's Park would be the answer to that one.
MacArthur's Park.
I think
that's very interesting.
Okay. I think.
And then you say your dad was a stubborn person.
Mm.
You did get along with your dad, obviously.
Yeah.
Are you also stubborn?
Yeah.
But like, was your dad a person to go to if there's anything that you wanted to talk to? Was it easy to go talk to your dad, or was it hard? Was he like you know, I'm sometimes scared to go to my dad.
Was he strict dad?
He was strict. He was strict because he was old school. But I'm going to be honest with you. My dad was not easy to talk to, but it wasn't his fault. It was mine. It was my fault. Okay. He wasn't easy to talk to because I decided he wasn't easy to talk to. And I, as a growing up, I didn't talk to many people. I wasn't a talker. I wasn't a sharer. In fact, I'm still
now
very
Look,
I can talk, but you know what about my own personal things and things like that? I'm a very open, very honest person. And I think in this day and age, particularly doing what we're doing now and
being online
like I am, you've got to just be open. You've got to be honest. Otherwise, people catch you out. People catch you out.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but I don't, you know, in terms of my personal life and in terms of my own pain and suffering and whatever I'm going through. I don't really talk. I'm bad, man. I'm bad. And to every relationship I've been in, I'm always accused of not talking enough. But I think...
I wish I could say that for myself.
Is it? Are you one of those guys who talks too much?
Yeah, way too much.
Oh, really?
I never stop.
That's why we've got this podcast.
Yeah.
Because
okay,
when he's on stage,
he's...
Look, Monet's brilliant on stage.
Oh, yes. Thank you. I paid her to say that, by the way.
Not enough. You didn't pay me
money
enough.
Well spent then.
So, but he likes to talk a lot on stage as well. And then I'm like sitting there and I'm showing him, you need to carry on, sing.
Yeah, but because I talk shit, man. I talk, I start talking about this aunties, you know, here and this, you know, anything else. This is not wrong. I've got a very good sense of humor.
Yes.
Sense of humor. But you know.
So why is that shit though? It's entertaining. As long as it's still entertaining. As long as it's not boring, then move on.
Yeah.
If it's not boring, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, Jana, listen, just to get back to your question, I don't really know if my dad was easy to talk to or not because I didn't really talk to him. Not about that stuff.
Okay.
We communicated. We had a huge amount of things in common. We loved each other. We fought like crazy.
Yeah.
We had a really lucky relationship, and then sometimes we didn't. I think it was a typical father and son relationship.
It is actually, It is actually.
He was no different. He was no more strict or...
I mean,
he was strict, man. He was strict, but...
He was old school, I mean.
But you know what? That's not a bad
same
thing.
That's not a bad thing. Never.
You know, I'm not saying he was strict as a bad quality. I think it's a good quality. I think if my mom and dad weren't strict, I could have gone well and truly out of control because I was relatively, like I said, I was relatively strong-willed and I wanted a jaw from very young.
Yeah.
And I think they were great parents, but I didn't really.
Yeah.
I think I don't know. I'm betting to answer the question because I can't. I think he was good to talk to.
Yeah.
To a lot of people. A lot of people came to my dad. A lot of people confided in him. A lot of people took advice from him, but I wasn't really one of them. I wasn't really one of them because I didn't really give him that opportunity too many times.
Yeah.
So it was my
fault. And then Monet, now, you actually also had the chance to meet Gene and he helped you with the music.
Well, to be honest with you, the first time I met him, he was at Peter Wormans' house, okay? But I didn't know him, I guess. I think his hair was longer, you know? And almost like a mohawk. I don't know what you call that style, anyway.
Yeah, no, he had a mallet for a long time. For a long time. Yeah, he was a proper 80s mallet. Absolutely.
Yeah, and you know, like Peter and Franz, they were being like they just kind of hushed, you know, to the living room, and Gene is sitting there. So he gives me this paper. First, he said, "Hi," with that beautiful fucking country voice, you know.
Immediately
I knew there, listen, this man is a man of respect because you could feel his fucking energy. And I mean,
I was
14, no, just turned 15, and he just gave me this piece of paper that says to me, "I want this tomorrow, same time." And it was a paper with my details, my ID number, my address, my mom's and all that. And then that's how I got the contract, the BMG contract.
Yeah, listen, who was that with BMG?
Yeah.
Oh, lekker. That's good. Yeah. Again, goes back, eh? But listen, but that was my old man, you know, and you're right, though. You've actually said something that's very right. You could feel his energy. He was a strong presence, and he had stage presence. He had a big stage presence. And that presence very often translated, people call it larger than life personality.
Yeah, that is it. I mean, it is.
He did.
Had enormous energy, you know.
Yeah.
You know?
No, he did. Wow. He did. He really did. And, you know, for that in itself, man, you got to take your hat off to the guy, you know.
Yeah, no, obviously, you know.
Look, Gene wanted you to do this tribute to Elvis. Was Gene
then,
a very big Elvis fan?
The biggest Elvis fan in the world.
He made me record 33 Elvis songs and no one knows.
Believe me,
he was the producer. So he made me do a take on just "I want you, I need you, I love you" 43 times.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay,
but well, that's just cruel.
But that CD was his baby.
Oh, really?
But
listen, he did. He threw his life and soul into that stuff. If he was producing.
Yeah, he did.
Hey. And I will tell you something. He got the best out of everybody he worked with. Everybody.
Oh,
everybody.
He did. Oh, yeah, everybody. Believe me. Yeah, that I know.
Did. Yes, he did.
I don't think I'll ever be able to pitch, you know, Dixieland again, ever. Yeah. If Gene wasn't sitting there. Because that high note, you know, these days I'm like, no way.
But listen, he was a huge Elvis fan. Yeah. The one time I saw my father cry, and I saw him cry a lot, was the day Elvis died. I heard him crying from my room, from my room, about 20 meters away in the house. I heard my dad crying loud, and I thought, hell, somebody in the family's died, or something has gone wrong, and he just heard that Elvis died. He cried for days. He was a mess.
Yes, I get goosebumps all over now.
But now I've got to tell you another story now, man. In 1990. My dad, I was getting into the business and I just landed my first TV gig. And I was starting in 6 weeks, 4 weeks, I beg your pardon. So he said, right, before you start this gig and before you are in the business proper, because this is now your real entry into the business, not this DJ thing that you're doing.
You and that's exactly what you were saying.
Exactly. And we have to go to America and we have to see Elvis's house. You and me.
Oh, yeah. Gaisling,
we have to go. We have to go on a pilgrimage. We have to go see Elvis's house. And I was like, okay, cool. So we went to London. We did a couple of things in London. We saw Phantom of the Opera in London. We saw a friend of his, blah, blah, blah. Oh, it also coincided with the fact that we went to Nashville because he had a contact there and he went to do a bit of an audition at a studio in Nashville.
Oh, okay.
But while we were there, we then drove the 2 hours and went down to Memphis. We went to Elvis's house.
Yeah.
He cried for about 2 hours. He just cried. He just said, he was in a wheelchair because, you know, when you're crippled there, any way, they put you in a wheelchair and you go to the front of the line, you are looked after like you've got nobody's business.
Yeah, yeah.
They put him in front of the line and we saw the house, we went through the house.
Yeah, funny enough, he always said to me, boy, you know, it always looks much bigger than it is.
Oh, tiny.
And he used to tell me, it's not that big,
tiny.
Photos.
Yeah. No, it's tiny. It's tiny. The property is quite big, but it's tiny. It's really not a big place at all. But were you guys
allowed upstairs then?
No. Nobody was allowed upstairs. No, they were still blocked off. And I think it's still blocked off, I think.
Yeah, no, it still is,
Is it? Yeah. And when I watched the movie, I went about a month ago. I was actually in the States for a couple of months, and I went with my girlfriend to go and see the movie there on opening weekend. Amen. My dad would have loved that movie. He would have loved my dad loved Elvis. And I'm going to tell you something now that I don't think many people know.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you this, honestly, if he was alive right now, if he was sitting here right now while I'm telling you this, he would just laugh. He would tell me I'm talking crap. But he would know that I'm telling, but he would know in his heart that I was telling the truth.
Because the first time I saw your dad cry, I just recorded this and I walked and it was outside in like a windows booth, and walked in the house and as I walk in, here's your dad. Now, first of all, I was petrified of him and I respected him a lot, but and I thought, shit, and this is what I'm thinking at the age of 15, was it so bad? But in the meantime, that's how, and he got so
emotional.
Well, he connected to that. It was amazing.
But he does though. But like I was saying, that's who he was. He would really connect with something. And he connected with Elvis in such a way that I'm telling you now, Monet, my father thought he was the South African Elvis. In his mind, he was South Africa's Elvis.
He was.
Just not in terms of the music or imitating him or anything like that, but just in terms of his persona.
Yeah, yeah, but that's what, I mean.
And the way he did what he did on stage.
But he was different. He did rock and roll, he did country, and every song he enjoyed himself. And to take it, he wasn't like, listen, he was part of the gang, but the Big Five, but he always stood out.
Yeah, but he was his own man. And I will tell you something else. There's something, I will say this without any fear of contradiction. My dad moved around more on stage than Oaks who could walk.
Yes, very true.
He had more energy in one spot than most people who could run up and down the stage like a crazy person. Yeah.
That's true. So much, you know, even Steve Hoffman said that, one night on stage.
Oh, really?
He said that. And he was very pissed off because when your father passed away, there was almost nothing in the media or the papers or anything. So Steve was quite very pissed off at that.
He actually, before Steve did Heart, he phoned us and said, listen, I want to do the song. And for me, it was like, man, you know what? I can't think of anybody better to do it because, I mean, Yeah, Steve, you know, my, I remember going to a show at the Rand show. And Steve was on the show. And the amount of respect that Steve showed my dad.
Yeah.
Even back, you know what? It was, and my dad was already on the way out in terms of his real, size of his legend. Yeah. And, you know, the work wasn't really there as much as anymore. And Steve was on the up. He was the biggest thing in the country at the time.
Yeah.
And he still had a huge amount of respect for my man, which was always, it was always nice to see, you know. Always good to see.
It's actually sad because I don't think that your dad really got enough recognition, you know, for who he was. If someone passed away now, everyone always remembers them.
Yes.
But it feels like like the world has forgotten about Gene Rockwell.
I go on media online on social media. That's one of things. And there's a lot of groups in his name. Listen, Gene Rockwell's name will live forever.
That's true. History. But I think what CC in some places of the world as well. Definitely. But I think what CC is saying is true because of the fact that when my dad died in 1998, social media wasn't even a thing. The internet wasn't even really a thing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's very true.
Do you know what I'm saying? So you get to a point where you, if my dad died now, it would be massive.
It would be massive.
But when he died, I mean, he had a little column, a tiny little column on page number 3. I never forget. Mm. And it also because of the fact that my dad, for about 4 or 5 years before he died, he'd really disappeared off the scene almost entirely. The work had dried up. Yeah. He was not well. He was not well at all.
I know about that,
he was battling. He was, I mean, the last 3 or 4 years of his life were not happy. They were hard. Yeah. They were very hard. Very hard. But you know,
but he never showed it. He never showed that he had pain or anything like that. I mean, you could see, but he never complained about it.
He was just
very more short-tempered than he was already.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. But he was pro, you know. He was pro. Yeah. Him and I could be swearing at each other in the car all the way to the gig. All the way. Yeah. We'd be fighting. Get on stage. He was the consummate professional. You would never even know. Get back in the car, drive home, fighting all again. But I'm telling you, he was a pro, man. He was a pro, dude. He was a pro.
That's the one thing I learned from CC, seeing that you asked me. I learned from Gene Rockwell. When you do a thing, it's a bog. You do a thing, you do it right, or you don't do it.
Right.
And to perfection, be professional.
Mm. Or stay at home.
Another thing he did also teach me was this following words. Okay, I couldn't understand it back then.
So yeah.
Never charge too cheap. I mean, for shows and that, because when you ask peanuts, they're gonna think you're a monkey.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
But back then, I didn't know a fucking thing about how much you charge for any fucking gig.
But shit, he was right though. He was right.
Still in high school.
Yeah, but but you learn. And you know, it's funny when you 10 years later, 15 years later, you'll get to a situation and you'll go.
Mm. Yeah.
You make a decision and you don't even know why you made that decision, but it's because of the advice you got when you were younger, you know, be it from my dad or be it from anybody else. I think, you know what, it was, listen, and also because he learned all the lessons the hard way, he could really tell you stuff that could count.
Well, that's true. He knew life. I mean, there's a difference between knowing life and being wise. He was wise.
He was street smart.
Yeah.
Street
that's smart. The thing. And there's the other thing, smart. Street smart, yeah.
Yeah, properly. Absolutely.
Yes. Well, can we listen to one of his songs?
Please.
I've got you back.
That's one I know he didn't do.
No. Listen, one of my favorites, obviously, is Carry Me. And I love that song. When
that
I hear
album.
That, I can see my dad. Oh, my God. Oh, that's
listen.
Beautiful.
That album, Monet, my dad was hell of a proud of that album. That album was a proper. I think Kevin Kruger was still involved. I think Daniel was still involved.
Yeah.
I don't know. Kevin I can't remember. I'm sure all. Then it would have been Denny Lalouette. It would have been Moritz on guitar. It would have been Lorraine, or it would have been Johan Lars on keyboards.
You know, they all played.
The boys.
You know, they all played in my recording, my first album that
really
produced. Yeah,
but they would have.
Bobby Lowe, Melody, Kevin Kruger, you know, all of them.
And Kevin and Dan Hill used to be two of the best producers this country's ever seen.
Yeah.
And if look, I could be wrong because I don't know the albums as well as I probably should. But that album, my dad was a hell of a proud. That song is a great song. And you're going to laugh. Before you play it, My brother's got two kids. His son's 15 and his daughter's 11. They love my old man's music. My nephew, Matthew, at one stage, he could sing almost the whole album. All his songs were cool, actually. His album. And he was like 13 or 12 at the time. I promise you, Carry Me Carry is one of his favorite songs.
Oh, I love that song.
There's something about that song.
I was like, no, Mona, you know.
If anything, you must do it as a tribute, man. Yeah. That's a cool one. You know what?
That's what I just said to Cici like a week ago.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's like trying to do Elvis's, let's say, hurt that, you know, only Elvis can do that like that.
Why don't you do Mornay's version?
I can't do Gene's version.
But you can't do that.
The thing is, my style and my music is almost like exactly like his. We love trumpets, but, you know, violence and
vocals.
And
yeah.
I wish I could get someone just to get me a little bit of you know, I'm not funny, but I've been waiting for anyone, any DJ, I'll send them my song. Just to put in a damn I want all I want with it.
Remix. Talk to some of the guys. There's some a lot of guys who do good jobs. Let's hear that song, man. That's a great idea.
Bubba, I don't think that one's playing. Is it
not? That is the quietest version of any Gene Rockwell song I've ever heard.
And she still tells me. I'm asking, can you hear it? Yeah, she shows me.
I can't hear anything. I almost started singing to myself. What do you guys do?
That was just about the most awkward moment in my career so far, 25 years.
Doesn't matter though. If that was awkward, hey, but that was funny.
It is kind of. You should see her face.
Yeah. Who's responsible for playing the song? Is it you or CC, Mornay?
Yeah, it's me, but this night I thought I'd turn it around.
Ah, lekker. CC, you're never going to hear the end of this.
No. How do you know? You see?
I'm telling you. I'm not going to let her hear the end of it. I'm even going to give her a hard time, and I don't even know.
Lordy, Lordy. Okay, but in the meantime, I'll wait for CC.
I can hear it.
Come on in, girls, I got a deal for you. Getting free, you get a drink or two. But tonight you can tell your boyfriends to stay at home. You're gonna meet some new friends that are counting on you being alone. So make your pretty face and pull your jeans up tight. Come on out and boogie, it's ladies' night. While it's ladies' night, the boys are lining up at the door. A lot of hearts are burning. Some jealous fool is about to start a fight. You'll be dancing and romancing, leaving with a stranger on ladies' night. You can get the woman, there'll be plenty of men. Give them what they want and you'll be packing the men. And just before the Phoenix hits you too hard to drive, you know there'll be somebody to give you a ride. To pull your jeans up tight. Come on out and boogie, it's ladies' night. What a ladies' night.
Man, I love this.
That's real rock and roll.
You can sing rock and roll. That's what I say. You could sing rock and roll. You could do country. You could do about everything. I'm telling
you. At the heart of my dad, he was a rock and roller, dude. He loved country music.
I know.
But he was a rock and roller, dude. Yeah. He was a rock and roller. But
do you think he went to the country way because there was more of a market then?
I think both. One, because it was a market, definitely. I'm not going to lie to you. It was definitely a business decision. But also because he really, really loved the music. He loved country music.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, me too. Oh, I love it, man. Listen, I was just in Nashville a couple of times in the last, just a couple of months ago now. 6 weeks ago, I was in Nashville twice in 1 month. And I went up and down Music Row, up and down Broadway for two full days, just listening to bands and the best country music in the world. Yeah. And I just it reminded me why I love country music so much. And I'm a huge country music fan, but I like new country.
Now that's what CeCe, that's her dream.
Oh, is it? I would love to go there.
CeCe,
line dancing.
Listen, I wrote the first line to a song. In fact, it might not even end up being a first line. It might be a first line of, it might be the last line of a chorus.
Well, it's there. That's all that counts.
No, but listen, and it is this. I might never got to heaven, but I got to Nashville.
Wow. Rock and roll.
Well, and that's close enough, dude.
I say once.
You know, it's literally the only line of the song that's even written. It's a song that will never be written, but it's a song that I just remember thinking, I've never got to heaven. I'll never get to heaven, but I got to Nashville. You know what? And it's close, man. Because
with your permission, I'd like to try and write something like it.
Go mad.
I'm going to keep something about never been to Spain, because now I hear that.
Look, I love that song.
But remember that now, CeCe. Been to Nashville. That's kind of cool.
Because it's heaven. It is heaven. And every single band you hear is better than the last band you hear. And the worst thing about it is not one single band on Broadway plays for money. Not one single band is paid. I beg your pardon. They don't get paid.
Passion,
they all play for tips. They play for tips, my boy. So you'll hear a woman singing. So there's this incredible singer standing up on stage. She sounds like Leanne Rimes, man. The woman singing the hell out of everything. And then the guy will go, right, I hope you enjoyed that. But our singer, whatever her name is, she's now going to walk around and get tips. So if you like the band, please, we survive on tips. Yeah. They play in
Kid almost
Rock's
like me and CeCe on online.
Yeah, but listen, same kind of vibe, dude. Nobody gets paid. They play for tips in Nashville, the home of country music. They are, because they're waiting to get discovered. Indeed. They're waiting to get discovered, these guys, man.
Yes.
And incredible musos. Incredible musos. I've never in my life.
There's nothing that can make me more. I'm going to say this right now. I'm just getting caught now.
Yeah.
Randy. Okay, in a Southern belle, the Southern girls in. Oh, my man, when they talk, sugar pie. Oh,
their favorite thing is marry
her. Yeah. I'll make love to her voice.
I promise you, they are the most. You know, everyone talks about Southern hospitality. It is the most real thing you will ever experience in your life. People in the South are more friendly than anybody I've ever met. They are, man. Beautiful
and
people.
Most American presidents are actually all South.
But let's not hold that against. Let's not hold their presidents against them, because they're not. No. Their presidents.
No, we can't do that.
Their presidents are very bad examples of who those people are, because they're good people, man. They're good people.
Well, the same with ours,
though. 100%. You know, I always say, I've got this theory about every country in the world. You've got crazy oaks on the right, on the far right. You've got 5% who are crazy. And on the left, you've got 5% who are crazy. But the 90% in the middle, they're just cool people. They just want to live. They want to work. They want to eat.
Liberal.
They want to fall in love. They want to have kids. They want to have grandkids. They just want to live, man. And but the only thing we ever hear about is the crazy on the left and the crazy on the right. They're on the edges. Yeah.
That's true. What is your motto in life? Your motto.
Yeah. That's a tough one, because I think over the years, I think I've had a whole bunch of different ones.
So you like me, we got a lot of quotes.
Yeah.
Which is deep. I mean, and it makes sense. If I got a pick one, hell no.
We can say what we like on this podcast, right? We can do anything.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to be
trust me. I believe you in that.
But I used to say when I was younger, I still believe this, but I don't say it anymore because it's a bit brash. I used to say,
no, man.
You can be anything in the world, but don't be a dick. You know what I mean? That used to be.
Asshole.
Yeah, don't be.
You're born a dick, you'll die a dick, son.
Just don't be a dick, man. And I think if you can get through your life and you can just avoid being that, I think we all are at sometimes, all of us, every single one of us. But my motto has kind of changed. I think as I get older, I still people mustn't be, don't be an arsehole. It's hard work being an arsehole.
No, I think, you know, I think you're way too short-tempered as your dad.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think, what's happened is I think my life has changed in the last 4 years. And I really, 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 it's a Maya Angelou quote. And I'm counting my words, and I'm delaying the process here because I don't want to sound like I'm one of those deep and meaningful people, because I'm really not that deep at all. So people will forget what you did.
Yeah.
People will forget what you said, but they will never forget the way you made them feel. And I always believe that. I've always, in the last 4 years, particularly, ever since I got sober 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And I live by the one day at a time theory, but I honestly believe, make people feel good about themselves. Be nice, man. Be nice.
No, it costs nothing. I mean,
it's so much easier, man. I remember when I was younger, I could also be a proper asshole.
Well, I think we all were.
Yeah, but it was, you know, it's hard
especially
work.
We got some, you know,
it's hard work. It's hard work
that's
being an asshole.
My friend said to me the other day morning, have you earned that title being a, you know, like it's in Afrikaans?
But that's the thing though. But it's hard work, man. It's so much easier just to be nice. Just be nice, man.
Yeah.
You know, I think anyway. You know, a lot of people might hear this and go, yeah, but you're not nice. I don't know what cuck you're talking. But I think I'm doing the best I can. I'm trying to be I'm as nice as I possibly think I can be. And I think
you're a nice guy. Unless you went easy on me.
No. But listen.
I'm telling you, I was petrified.
Let me tell you something.
5 minutes before the time. I started getting all these shakes and shit. I'm like, what the fuck?
Gark, man. Morne, I promise you, I'll guarantee you one thing. I said the same thing to a client online today. I'm going to Cape Town for a couple of days, doing a few gigs down there. And the guy said, listen, whatever you do, this energy that you've got now online, bring that. And I said, but anything I can guarantee you is on Thursday and Friday, when I get there, you're going to get me.
Yeah.
Authentic, 100% me. That's what you're going to get.
Yeah.
Because and this podcast is 100% me. Everything I do now is as close to 100% me as I know how.
Believe it or not, but this is what the show's groundwork is about. We say it like it is, and we don't pretend, and we don't lie, you know.
Yeah, but you know what? Again, lying is hard, dude, because someone's going
to
catch you.
It's a lot of work. You know, it's scientifically proven that you need two lies. For one lie, you need six to cover that up.
My stepdad used to say, you know what, if you want to be a liar, then you must make sure that you're a bloody good liar, because you need to remember what you lied about.
That's it.
Because they are going to catch you.
See, but now there's my problem. To remember all those lies, you've got to be clever, and I'm not clever. I'm stupid. So,
I don't think you're stupid.
I try to stick to the truth. I try and stick to the truth so that no one's going to.
You're way too wake up witty, and your witty is a sign of intelligence, eh? There's a difference between. I thought Cece earlier today, I don't know what she was fighting to me about, but I said to her, listen, oh man, there's a difference between clever and intelligent.
Oh, massive. Yeah. Massive.
Well, I kind of dropped myself there.
No, but you're right, though. It's true. But I think, like I said, the other saying, sorry, just to go back to that thing, because I want us to, is the other thing is one day at a time. Mm. One day at a time. Take today, deal with today, because I think that's a big thing. You know, particularly, like I say, getting sober, which was a big thing. Now it's one day at a time, you know.
And was it just normal alcoholism and all the other bunch of shit that comes with
everything,
it?
Everything. Yeah. Everything. I just completely and utterly overdid everything. I jolled way too hard. And I got to a point where, and you know what? It was either.
But do you think that the business, I mean, because I know now a lot of people are going to tune in. Do you think the business, because I almost got this reputation, anyway. Do you think the business kind of, you know, changes you or puts you in that, I don't know, in that direction that you got to. I mean, you know, sometimes doing three gigs a day. Because I believe when I do this show tonight, tomorrow night's show is going to be better. Because you can't expect you know, do a good show, the next day is not a good show.
No, sure.
So do you think that kind of pushes people into, you know, using uppers and downs and all that?
I think it does. I really think it does. I think it's part of it. But is it an excuse? No. But I do think it's... True. Because that's one thing about it being an addict of any kind or an alcoholic or anything like that. You can't... If you ever blame... the thing then you don't.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you're shifting the blame. Actually,
you blame yourself. But I will tell you this. No, exactly. You're in denial. But here's the thing. I do think is that the business makes it easy. It makes it very easy. So there's two things. So you get this other situation with whatever, drugs, alcohol, whatever it is, that, you know, even if a client knows that you're drinking too much or you're doing something else, they don't care. But as long as you are doing your job and you are going, they don't care. They don't care. It's just like, but when it gets to a point where it affects your job, then they'll care. Yes. Do you know what I'm saying?
Obviously,
So damaged, it's relatively easy to get away with it. So you can do it in this business, and it's almost like, it's rock and roll, whatever. And it makes it, I don't want to say acceptable because it's never acceptable, but it's more, it's less frowned upon in the entertainment business than other spheres of the world.
That's true. That's very true.
I think it can push you to it if you've got that kind of personality and you think, okay, well, I need something else to help me here. Because I know a lot of guys. I know a lot of guys who work a lot harder than anybody I've ever seen in my life, and they've never taken a drug, and they've never.
Yeah, that's it. That's the other point. Yeah,
you see what I'm saying? So, I think it's, you know, any what, you can find an excuse to do anything
to go sober. I mean, you know, what was the?
I hit rock bottom, my butt. Rock bottom.
Yeah. Okay. Rock bottom.
I was still working, and I was still doing what I needed to do, but my life had gone. My life had really gone to shit. Just in terms of family, reputation.
Oh, yeah. I think I'm there now. But
man. I tell you. And I woke up one morning and I just realized, hey, that's me. I've got to make a choice. And I did the whole rehab thing. I did everything. I went into rehab. I did the thing. My daughter walked me all the way through. My brother, my mother, my stepdad, my son.
Yeah.
They all walked me right through the whole process. They all knew it was coming.
You had to support it.
The support system is most important.
Absolutely. Without that, you cannot. Okay, that's also rubbish. Yeah. You can, but it's so much more difficult if you don't have that kind of support. And my family were incredible. So I stay sober now, 90% for me and 10% because I owe it to them
for
what they did for me. And you know, and I honestly believe that people deserve the best from you.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah.
And I can't be my best if I'm drinking.
And you like, and the thing is, you like to please people. You like the energy you get back when you see someone happy because you've made their day. That's just beautiful. That's your passion. And I admire for that. But thank you so much.
I
do appreciate this. Geez, like, you know, I wish I could have had your just open it now. Shout out. You know, I can have your WhatsApp number so I can call you for braai or something.
with pleasure, my boy. You can contact me very easily.
See, that's the beautiful thing about it. And, you know, I said to Zizi, because a lot of people go about, you know, when do you have an attitude or this or that? I said, listen, let me explain to you like this. If I met Elvis Presley in person and he had an attitude, I would have said, off.
Yeah.
Because humbleness is the most beautiful thing ever.
Yeah.
100%. In fact, you talk about attitude. My dad used to say, when guys had attitude, even though my dad had a bit of attitude, when guys had attitude, but do you know that chop, that proper Vinhard attitude?
But his attitude was like, no, but listen, you had that.
There's a different attitude.
Yeah, he had this attitude of, don't fuck with me.
Yes, absolutely. But my old man, when guys would come with an attitude, you know, these lighties would come into the business and he would check them and they've got this attitude. And my dad would say, you know what, but Elvis died and music still carried on. So don't come here with your cuck attitude. So, because if Elvis could die and music could still survive, then nobody can have an attitude because music and this business is bigger than all of us put together.
Well, that's true. I mean, Elvis sold more albums after his death than was alive. I mean,
listen, Michael Jackson died. And guess what? The next morning you turned on the radio and there was still music. There was still music.
Yeah.
So if those guys can come and go. Then who are we? Who are we to have an attitude, but who are we?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
You've got to be confident. You've got to be confident.
It's like my daddy told me, you're better than no one, but no one's better than you.
Hundreds. Yeah. Hey, listen, I know we're wrapping up. I can feel it. But I must tell you this. I can feel it.
I mean, this is one of those personal, interesting, unknown questions because I am a bit.
But listen, I can hear we're wrapping up, which is cool, man. It's been awesome. Thanks, guys. But I'm going to tell you the thing about attitude. I mean, no, but I've got to tell you the story quickly.
I've got all night, man.
No, that's cool. But I was driving into a little dorpie, right? And we were driving into this dorpie. Yeah, man, I must have been maybe 15, 16, okay? And again, you know, I said earlier, my dad didn't really give me a lot of advice, but he taught me a lot of things along the way that I realize now I knew then, and I know why I know them. So we drive into this town, man. I don't know what town it was, because you used to love playing the little towns because they used to go mad when you went.
Just give me an idea now.
Hey, but I'm telling you, let me tell you that the little towns, they starved of entertainment. Like, you've got no idea. So you book out the town hall, you go play in the town hall, you sell your tickets, you do the whole thing yourself. You and CC get on the road.
I mean, and him being Gene Rockwell, imagine that. Yes, yeah.
Listen, I'm telling you, it was such a jolt, but such a jolt. And then, so we get into this town. So we drive in, and there's this guy. His car's obviously broken down, but he's got his whole body under the bonnet and he's grease up to his armpits, grease on his face. He's got a torn pair of jeans. And I laugh at this guy. I laugh at him. I check this boople on the side of the road, cleaning and fixing his car. I promise you. I was so stupid. I was a lati, young, stupid lati. So I looked at this human being and I made an assessment that, check this, okay. How cuck is his life? He's a little guy on the side of the road fixing it. My dad pulled the car over so fast, but I promise you, my head spun.
Yo.
And he stopped that car and he looked at me and he said, can you do that? Can you do that? Yo. Can you? And I'm looking at him like, why aren't you just agreeing with me? What are you? And he looked at me and said, can you do that? I said, no. And he said, well, you shut the hell up.
You have respect for that man.
You respect that man. For doing something that you can't do, buddy. He's prepared to get himself dirty. Are you prepared to? You laugh at him because you're too precious to get yourself dirty.
That's true. You know, my daddy once told me that his father told him the same thing. Like the mechanic was there working on the car. And my dad came out of the house and he saw the guy and his fingers, the grease. And my dad goes to my grandfather and says, listen, check this guy out. You know, man, look at him.
Yeah.
He's filthy. You know, he spoke, my grandfather was very wise, and he just turned to my dad and said, I know all of you mentioned, but did you notice his beautiful hands?
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that's the way I was raised.
Yeah, but listen, think about that now. You know what I mean? That guy's hands, he's got a gift. He's got a gift.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That I do not have.
Yeah.
I do not.
Yeah.
I can't. Listen, and I think I was cursed after that because I can't even put a picture up my board. I'm so bad with my
hands. You know what bad is?
I'm so bad.
telling you. That's what I'm saying. Listen, if my voice is gone, I'm fucked. I'm telling you.
I can't even. No, believe me,
I'm dangerous. When it comes to electricity, no, fuck electricity. I don't do that because I'll fly over lounge.
I'd like to
say something about Monet.
Oh, here you go about the tire now again.
Please.
Yeah. So we stand next to the road. Flat tire.
Oh, dear.
So I can probably do it.
Yeah.
But I would not want to do it.
You know more about rugby than me. That's really intimidating. I like it.
So I'm on the phone and I'm like, let me just phone someone quickly.
Oh, God.
And Monet's like, you know, I can change the wheel.
I can change the tire.
And I'm like, no, I don't think you can.
She took a video. It's going to get so ugly.
She took a video.
So I actually took a video because he did change the video. He did change the tire.
In your defense, I did get mixed up with the lock that fucking thing.
Oh, did you?
Then you gave me that shit thingy.
Oh, well, you did well.
No, Simone is the kind of guy, he puts a tire on, but now when you hit reverse, it goes forward.
Yeah. it's like my dad said, Monet, when you take your branches, put it into a little mossy, it flies backwards.
I was scared of that. I promise you. I was like, did you make sure that the tire is like really, it's fuss, you know?
Please. Young man.
Because I was scared that if I drive, that tire is going to come off.
Hey, listen, where's that video that you took?
I put it
under the NDA file.
Oh, non-disclosure. I love it.
No. You must put that under the to be used later in my defense file.
Yes.
She's actually been bullying us, something like that. She's one thing about Cece, she's very, very loyal. Extremely loyal.
I can hear that.
A very sincere person with a very big heart. And she cries, you know, easily.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Lekker, man.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So
crying is lekker, man. Crying is lekker.
All right. Well, Dwayne, thank you so much. You know, I've had a had like a chat like this in a long, long, yeah, long time.
It's been
time.
Very lucky. Thank you, man. See, I like it because it's not talking about me. It's talking about my old man. I dig it. It's
yeah.
Like
yeah. Well, that was the idea.
I would like to just maybe if you would want to talk to you about what I actually said in one of the messages about the tribute.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. Okay, yeah, let's so chat. Let's talk. Let's talk.
I tell you what.
Let's talk.
Seeing that I'm recording my new album now, I will do a song.
Yeah.
Well, two or three songs if Dwayne records Trouble with me. We'll remix it.
Jeez, there we go. Yay.
I'm serious now. I mean, come on, man. I'm going to have to do Gene Rockwell songs on my rendition, but still, you can't do it like he does that. You know?
Here's the thing. I'm going to be honest with you. I'll think about it. I'll consider it. But I'm going to tell you, here's the reason I'm only thinking about it. Emotionally, for me to go near any of my dad's music, I've been asked probably 20 times to do tribute albums and to do this and that. So I have to do it the right. If I'm going to do it, I have to be sure I'm going to be able to do
it.
Yeah,
be the right state of mind. You've got to be. Yeah, I get
you. Know what I'm saying? So listen, I'm not saying no, and I'm not CC like I said. I'm not saying no to whatever you want to talk about, but I've just got to be in the right place, and it's just got to feel authentic to me. Otherwise, because you know, I've only ever sung three of his songs live ever, and that's when he died. The year after he died, I did a show at Hillfox Market. I did three songs and I only made it through 2.5. And I had to leave the stage. I was crying so much I sang hard only twice in my whole career.
Eh?
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's far enough in the past that I could maybe do something. But I'm also going to say to you that I totally get that story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you got to be in it hard. So, man, I know.
Well, let's do it like this.
Yep.
Let's talk. I like this.
So, when you feel like you are ready. Then you get back to me.
For someone to manage,
okay, but now there's a problem. There's a problem there. If you leave it up to me, I'm not gonna do it. And I'm gonna tell you the honest truth. But if you come to me and you approach me and we talk about it and we sit down, we talk about it like adults, and I think about it unemotionally for a second, then we might come up with a different answer.
Yeah, so let's call do it business.
Let's do it that way.
No one part about it.
I just want, you know what it is? I just want it to be done for the right reasons, number one.
So,
and for the right. Yeah. Which one?
Let me get you. Oh, you must play, young one. What are you doing? I'm on my nerves. CC, you're supposed to talk. No talking away.
Listen, I must be honest. It's been very lekker.
No, thank you so much, Dwayne. You know what?
Pleasure, man.
Thank you.
Man, pleasure. I was expecting, really. You know.
Thank you so much. Nice to meet you.
I didn't know that Sissy was, you know, bringing you on. I heard about this like I think a week ago.
And
I was
really? Well, that's cool, man.
Yeah.
well, I'm glad you did, Sissy. I'm glad you did. Thank you very much. It's always nice to talk about my old man.
Thank you for coming back to me.
Nah, don't be silly. It was great. Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks, Dwayne. Bye. You got your troubles, I've got mine. Found somebody else to take your place. You've got your trouble, I've got mine. I too have my sorrow today. All of my dreams have flown away. Now just like you, I sit and wonder why. You've got your troubles, I've got mine. You need something.
See, now, this is what I'm saying. I mean, I've got a good ear, I know that, but that sounds like the young guy. Listen, that's genius. I've got mine. It's fucking fascinating, man. Question. Who did that? Trouble.
Yeah. What about that?
Man, it's beautiful. Good lord.
Yes. Yeah, it's so hard. I can't do that stuff anymore. That's too hard for me now, but.
Me too, don't worry.
Yes. I'm listening to that now. I'm thinking, I think I hurt myself that day.
Kneep die bankjes in, geef die ballen.
Telling you. Hey, that was lekker to hear as well, guys. Thank you so much. Have a lekker night, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, too.
Thank you.
Ciao, guys.
Maybe another place, another time. You've got your troubles, I've got mine. You've got your troubles, I've got mine. You've got your troubles, I've got mine.
All right, that's it for the Big Boss Man show. No, I'm not the Big Boss Man. I'm still waiting for that son of a... Big Boss Man. Big Boss Man. That's right, folks. Yeah, I did say I'm working on a new album, which I am. It's the first original since the first gold one I had, like, fucking 30 years ago. 30 years ago. So, yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present...
to you, Sissy.
Yeah. Well, I'm very excited for the new album. I actually had the privilege to sit in studio and listen to it.
Oh, well, you had to. You're doing backing vocals. You just don't know it yet.
Ah, shit. Yeah, and yeah, it's going to be awesome. So
a message for your message for the show.
Wow. Yeah. Dwayne actually said something tonight that I know for a fact that you need a support system. And my message would be to everyone out there, doesn't matter who it is or, you know, if someone's got issues in the family, whatever the case may be there for them. Do not back away and let them carry on their own.
ABT.
Yeah.
Always be there.
Because everyone needs someone.
That's true. Well, I guess mine would be get a prostate. I'm just joking. Yeah. No, I'm just joking. You know what? Like I said, there's not a more beautiful quality to a person than being humble. Like I've seen that tonight with Dwayne.
Yes.
And that I love.
What a nice guy.
I love it. I love it.
Dwayne, if you are listening, thank you so much for taking the time to join us tonight.
If you're, is that like,
no, he went off, so I'm not sure if he's still listening, but yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Good night. Don't make it. Adios.
You just don't, baby, that's all.
I'm gonna get me a boss man, I'm gonna dream it right. I work hard in the daytime, ready in the night. Because I can hear me when I go.
Maybe you should steal another cell phone, Big Boss Man.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mona Leslie has left the ballroom.